This is Audible.
The Lightning Struck Hard. Written by T.J. Klune. Narrated by Michael Leslie.
Chapter 1.
The Villain Monologues.
And now, I will tell you of my plans to take over the kingdom.
The evil wizard and total douchebag, Lartin the Darkleaf, said with a cackle. Please don't, I said. You really don't have to. Of course, he didn't listen. Villains never do. That's why they suck. A lot. It didn't help that my arms and legs were bound with vermilion root. That shit is hardcore. No lie.
You see, back when I was a child, I always knew that I was different. That I was meant for greater things than what my father had planned for me.
Lartin looked out toward the cave entrance, almost wistfully, as if thinking of his childhood days. What a dick.
He always looked down on me with scorn, because I never wanted to be an ironsmith. He always said that.
Do you think he realizes we don't care? Gary asked me. He sounded really bitchy when he said it, but if you were a hornless gay unicorn, you'd be bitchy too. Like, seriously, don't care? At all? I shrugged as Lartin looked at us in disbelief. He has daddy issues.
I don't have daddy issues,
Lartin said, sounding annoyed. So that gives him the right to monologue? Gary snorted. When he did, little pink and purple sparkles shot out his nose. Being a unicorn is awesome like that. He's a villain, I said. It's what they do. They have to broadcast their entire plan when they think they've won because no one else will ever listen to them. Lame, Gary said, glancing at Lartin. Girl, I really don't care. Unbind my legs before I scratch your eyes out. You don't have fingers, I reminded him. You can't scratch anything. He's lucky I don't have my horn back yet, Gary muttered. There'd be so much goring, it'd be unreal. It'd be like Gore City up in here. These roots are chafing. He should undo them. Are you going to undo them? I asked Lartin.
No,
he said.
You know I captured you and you're my prisoners, right?
Did he? I asked Gary. Well, we are tied up, Gary said, and not in the fun way. I don't want to know when you've been tied up in the fun way, I told him. He rolled his eyes. Sam, you are such a prude.
Guys,
Lartin said,
I have a plan that I need to tell you about. You need to listen.
I am not a prude, I said to Gary. Just because I don't talk about, you know, sex stuff, that doesn't make me a prude. Your face just turned red when you stuttered on the word sex, Gary said. I almost believed you. I didn't stutter.
You kind of stuttered,
Lartin said, because he was an asshole who I was totally going to kick in the balls before the day was up.
Can I get back to my story? I really think you'll appreciate the many facets of my character once you hear it. I'm dynamic, and...
When were you tied up? I demanded. Unicorns aren't allowed to be whorish. You're supposed to be all virtuous and pristine. Oh, please, Gary said. How do you think I was created? Huh. Honestly, I always thought unicorns were made from sunshine and rainbows and good feelings. Like you just appeared one day in a field filled with flowers and a big fat sunbeam falling all around you, and there'd be butterflies or something. That sounded way pretty and realistic for unicorn creation. Gary squinted at me, nostrils flaring. Seriously? No, you idiot. My parents had hardcore unicorn sex, liked bone for days. They're very adventurous that way. Up in trees, down by rivers, near graveyards at midnight. There really isn't anywhere they haven't spread the love.
Oh, my goodness,
Lartin whispered.
Is this really happening?
Gross, I said. That's just gross. Hey, unicorn sex is a beautiful thing. Yeah, but that's your parents you're talking about. That's wrong on so many levels. And why haven't I met them? Or heard about them? They're touring the outer reaches with their swingers group. Swingers? Yeah, like partner swapping? Maybe orgies? I don't know. I was horrified, and I'm sure it showed on my face. Dude, what? Prude, Gary said. I'm not a prude. I just don't see why we have to talk about sex all the time, or your parents being in orgies. Well, I guess you can't understand what you've never had, Gary said, a mean little curl to his stupid unicorn lips.
You're a virgin,
Larton said. You bitch, I said to Gary. And no, I'm not a virgin. You so are, Gary said, because apparently this morning he'd eaten sass for breakfast. A 20-year-old virgin. No, there was that one guy at that thing with the people. My argument was sound. That didn't count. He kissed you and you came in your pants. And then you proceeded to tell him how his hair reminded you of your father. It did. It's not my fault he had dad hair.
I'm not even a virgin,
Larton said, sounding smug.
The ladies all want up on little Larton. There is so much sex to be had when I'm around.
Gary glared at him. You call your dick little Larton? Dude, wrong. I don't have time for all the relations and courting and wooing bullshit, I said. I'm a wizard. I have quests. You're an apprentice, Gary said. And you're sent on errands? You know how you wanted to dye a strip of your mane purple, I said. Yes, because I'd be beautiful. Well, too fucking bad, I said savagely. I'm not going to do it. You're just going to have to keep it white. Forever. You promised! That was before you were a jerk. Oh my gods, Gary said. Larton, get over here and untie me. I want to kick Sam in the fucking face. No, he's going to untie me so I can hex the shit out of you. Larton, get your ass over here and untie me. Larton said.
I don't know if you guys understand the point of being captured. Like, I captured you, right? And so,
no, Gary said. Not right. You caught us off guard because we were looking for wormwood in the dark woods, and we just happened to stumble into your camp, and you took advantage of a situation. That doesn't count as capturing. That counts as being an asshole. When were you tied up? I asked again. You're still on that? Gary asked.
Ugh.
You brought it up. Fine. It was that centaur we met last year, in the elf realm. You said you were just friends. We were. We were just the kind of friends that tied each other up and pushed our penises together. What was his name again?
Octavio, Gary said with a dreamy sigh. The hands that half-man had.
I have hands, Larton said. And I've tied you up.
Is he hitting on me?
Gary whispered loudly. Are you hitting on him? I asked Larton.
No. I was just pointing out similarities of the situations.
I think he was hitting on you, I told Gary. Gary looked back at Larton and sized him up. Then he did that thing that I swear only unicorns can do. His blue eyes got impossibly big. His eyelashes lengthened as he fluttered them at Larton. His mane was luminous in the darkened cave and he purred. Well, aren't you precious? Ew. I said. Seriously. Larton blushed.
Oh, stop it.
Does little Larton want to come out to play?
Gary asked, batting his eyes. I wish I were anywhere else but where I am. I said to no one in particular.
Maybe,
Larton said, trying for coy but somehow landing on straight out creepy. Gary giggled. He giggled.
Well, Maybe I should tell you that my tongue is 15 inches of the best thing you'll ever have.
Yuck, I said. That just sounds excessive.
I've never done it with a horse,
Larton said.
Sounds illuminating.
Oh, you shouldn't have said that, I told him.
Horse, Gary snarled. The pretty unicorn act dropped immediately. Red sparks shot from his nose.
Did you just call me a horse?
Listen here, you two-legged bag of shit. I'm not a motherfucking horse. I am a unicorn, and I am magic and a beautiful creature made of fucking sunshine and rainbows and good feelings.
I knew it,
I whispered. Get your ass over here so I can stomp on your face, Gary said to Larton. Untie me, lie down on the ground, and let me stomp on your face.
You don't have a horn,
Larton pointed out. That's just rude, I said. I didn't point out that your nose is really big. Why would you say something like that?
Sam, Gary said tearfully. He called me a horse.
Hey, I said. Hey, look at me. He did. His eyes were wet, and I wanted to punch Larton in the spleen. Who is the most beautiful unicorn in all of Varenya?
Me,
Gary sniffed. And who has the prettiest mane?
Me.
And who is a badass motherfucker who got a bitch?
Me.
Damn right.
Sam?
Yeah?
We'll find my horn, right?
I promise, I said. Because we would. It was important to him, so it was important to me. It had been stolen long ago, years before I'd met him. He couldn't even look at himself in the mirror without cringing. That was unacceptable.
And we can dye my mane purple when we get out of here?
First thing, I said. I already bought the dye before we left the city.
You love me,
Gary sighed. I do.
Okay, I feel better now.
Good.
So, are we going to finish or what?
Larton said. I rolled my eyes. Fine, do your villain thing.
This is so stupid,
Gary muttered. Larton's eyes lit up. He posed in front of us again.
So, it was my father that...
Taddy issues,
Gary coughed. Larton glared at him. Sorry, Gary said. He wasn't sorry. I had something in my throat.
My father said that I would never.
We didn't lose that bag of wormwood, did we? I asked Gary. Nah, Gary said. It's still in the satchel on my back. Good. Morgan would be pissed if we forgot that.
He's going to be pissed already. We were supposed to be back yesterday.
We would have, I said, if some people hadn't decided to tie us up in a cave. Gary and I stared at Larton.
You guys are the worst prisoners ever,
he muttered. Then his eyes went wide.
Did you say Morgan?
You shouldn't eavesdrop, Gary said. That's rude. We weren't listening to you, so you shouldn't be listening to us.
Your apprentice to Morgan?
Larton squeaked.
Morgan of Shadows?
I grinned at him. The one and the same.
Oh, no.
Larton moaned.
You're Sam of Wilds.
Such a sexy name. Gary sighed. Have I ever told you that? Thank you, I said, pleased. It sounds very rugged, doesn't it? I'd worked very hard on earning that name. It'd change again when I was a full-on wizard, but it was good enough for now. Gary laughed. Yeah, but then people meet you and you're all skinny and adorable, and they're like, what? I think you meant to say muscular and dangerous, I said. You got your words confused again. No, I'm pretty sure I got them right, as I always do. To be muscular, you have to have muscles. I have muscles. I tried to flex, but my hands were bound behind me, and it didn't work out so well. Okay, shut up. But I am dangerous.
Yeah, okay, Gary said.
I am. Honey, you're pouting. That's not dangerous. It is adorable. I'm not pouting, I said, as I pouted.
Oh,
Gary said.
Oh,
Larton said. Shut up, Larton. Okay, so can we leave? Gary asked. We both looked at Larton.
You're Sam of Wilds,
he said. No shit, I said.
Do you know how much you're worth?
Ugh, not again, I groaned.
I could totally ransom you,
Larton said excitedly.
It would fund my world domination plans for the next 6 years.
Morgan's going to be so mad at you, Gary said to me. It's not my fault. Well, you do get captured a lot, I suppose. And everyone knows your name. Right, how weird is that? Totally weird.
So much gold,
Larton said as he paced back and forth.
Pounds and pounds of gold.
Hey, Sam. Yes, Gary. Has Morgan ever paid a ransom for you? Nope. Not once. And why is that? He said that if I was dumb enough to get caught, then I'd have to figure my own way out. Ah, Gary said. Larton stopped.
Never paid?
Not once, I told him. Can you let us go now?
No,
he snapped.
I'm sick of this. You are going to sit there. I am going to tell you my plan. And then I'm going to get so much gold that I won't be able to carry it all.
Then how are you going to move it? Gary asked.
Move what?
Larton looked perplexed. You just said you were going to get so much gold that you weren't going to be able to carry it, I said. So how are you going to move it if you can't carry it?
Oh,
Larton said.
Well, shit.
Wow, Gary said. If that's how well you think things through, I can't wait to hear your plans for world domination. I'm sure they'll be positively riveting. And well thought out. Burn, I said. You just got so burned. You'll have scars from all the burn.
I'll buy a cart,
Larton exclaimed.
And a horse.
Then he went back to being a complete douche.
Or I'll just keep the unicorn here, and he can pull it for me.
Oh, bitch! Say that to my face, bitch! Gary snarled. Come on, I dare you. I wouldn't say that to his face, I said, even if he dared you. But Larton the Darkleaf was an idiot. The wizarding clan of the Darks usually were, so it was no surprise when Larton stepped forward and said,
You'll pull my cart, horse!
That's when the 9-foot half-giant named Tiki roared and burst into the cave.
Sam!
He rumbled.
Gary!
You're so dead, Gary said to Larton. You don't even know. Tiki! Smash him! And since Tiki loved Gary so, he moved forward to do just that. Wait, Tiki, I said. And since Tiki loved me so, he waited. Gary looked murderous. Sam, he growled. And if you've never heard a unicorn growl, let me tell you, it's delightfully frightening. Your angry face is awesome, I said to him. He preened. I've been practicing. Watch. He glared at me, eyes narrowing, teeth bared. See? I got chills, I assured him.
I smash now?
Tiki asked. Of course, Larton tried to mutter off some defensive spell. Little green lights arced around Tiki before they dissipated. You're not a very good wizard, are you? I said. Giant dude. Their blood is like the anti-magic. Come on! You learned that on your first day of wizard training.
I smash now?
Tiki looked very pissed off. He usually was when his two favorite people in the entire world were captured. Come to think of it, maybe it did happen a lot. Just hold on, Tiki, I said. No, don't hold on, Gary said. I want to see his insides on the outside. So bloodthirsty, I said, in awe.
I would prefer there to not be any smashing, Larton said, if I'm being totally honest.
But Tiki was done with the situation.
Huh?
So he smashed Lart in the Darkleaf, multiple times, into a variety of objects, like rocks and cave walls. It wasn't a very pretty sight. Well, with the blood and stuff. And the brains. When the smashing was complete, Tiki came over and snapped the vermilion roots that bound me and my magic. As soon as the roots fell, I felt a surge of green and gold and yellow flow through me. So much better, I muttered.
Always get caught,
Tiki grumbled as he tended to the roots at Gary's feet. Now that's not specifically true. I'll be honest, though, I've grown as a person this time around, and will pledge to avoid capture in the future. That was not the complete truth. I would most likely get captured again. It was sort of my thing.
Who's my big strong man?
Gary cooed at Tiki. Tiki blushed.
Me.
Yes, you are. I knew you'd come and rescue me. I was like a princess, waiting for her hero.
So pretty.
Tiki said, running his big hand gently through Gary's mane.
My pretty princess.
Can we leave the cave now? I asked. You guys can flirt later.
It's okay, Tiki, Gary said. Sam's just dealing with some issues. He recently came to the realization that he's a 20-year-old virgin prude.
I am not.
I told him about Octavio, Gary said. Sam couldn't even say the word sex without stuttering.
Sam never gonna find a boyfriend,
Tiki said.
No one gonna take his flower.
Don't talk about my flower, I snapped at them as I checked the satchel on Gary's back. The wormwood was still wrapped safely where I'd left it. So at least this wasn't a complete loss. And I don't need a boyfriend. I'm an independent man with priorities. I'm going to be the youngest wizard to pass his apprenticeship, and then I'm going to do great things. Big things.
Oh, Gary said, and he grinned evilly.
Evil unicorn smiles are the sign of wicked things about to be said.
I hated them.
So I suppose a certain knight doesn't factor into those priorities whatsoever. Like maybe you want to be the youngest full wizard just to impress him? You shut your whore mouth, I growled, trying not to sigh dreamily at the thought of bright green eyes and a beautiful smile. And wavy blonde hair, like the waviest.
I wanted to touch it with my face.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh, Gary said.
You want mouthful of night,
Tiggy said.
Night take your flower and eat it.
Tiggy! I shouted, scandalized.
Such a prude, Gary muttered. I hate you both so much.
And to prove my point, I stormed out of the cave. But they obviously didn't believe me because they followed me. Like I knew they would. I'm lucky that way, I guess. Chapter 2.
Please don't make my nipples explode. Once upon a time in the kingdom of Orenia, there was a kick-ass boy born in the slums of the city of Locks. His parents were hard-working, and at times, life could be difficult, but they were alive and had all their teeth, which was very important. The mother had been a gypsy, olive-skinned and beautiful. She could smile sweetly to hide the steel in her eyes. Once, a man had tried to rob her in an alley. The man no longer had testicles.
What happened to the testicles?
The boy asked when he was 4. The mother grinned.
I threw them in the sewer.
The father groaned.
I'm glad our child knows that story now.
The father hailed from the north, deep in the mountains where snow fell year-round, and people wore unfashionable things made from yak skin. He had auburn hair and a deep laugh that sounded like thunder in the fall.
I'm not wearing that,
the boy said when he was 7. The father sighed.
It's what my people wear. It'll keep you warm.
He tried to push the weird furry coat thing at the boy again. The boy said,
It's August, and I don't want to look like I'm the poster child for what happens when a human has relations with a yak.
Come one, come all, see the incredible yak child.
Sam,
the father growled. It was a low sound that always made the boy smile.
Sam,
the mother laughed. It was a husky sound that always made the boy happy. The mother was Rosemary,
The father was Joshua. They lived in the slums, yes. They didn't have much, yes. But they were happy. We were. I swear it on all I have. My mother worked at a little flower shop at the end of a broken brick road, singing as she tended to the wildflowers in a language that sounded almost like birds trilling. She told me once that the songs were old, older than Varenya. Her mamia, the grandmother of her clan, had taught her the songs under the stars in a field far from the city of Locks. My father worked at the lumber mill. He was a big man, able to carry a 300-pound Varanian oak log over his shoulder without breaking a sweat. He told me once that in the north, there were beautiful trees made of ice and that could be shaped into the most wondrous things, like dragons and horses and swords with the sharpest blades. At night, when he couldn't sleep, he would carve little trinkets. A heart for my mother, a raccoon for me, little toys for the children in the slums who had never had such things. Like most other people around us, my parents couldn't afford to send me to the schools, so they taught me themselves at night, bringing home old and outdated books on math and art and history. After I started learning at the age of 4, it only took 3 months to point out mistakes in what was supposed to be factual. I didn't miss the smile my parents exchanged over my head. We were happy. I had friends, well, sort of. I had acquaintances, boys and girls that ran with me through the streets. The castle guards knew my name, and sometimes they'd give me bread and meat, and I'd share it with the others. Sometimes I'd accidentally do something illegal, like setting a cart on fire that belonged to a rich man who'd hit a boy named Eric because he hadn't gotten out of his way quick enough. The guards would look the other way, because surely little Sam would never do anything like that. No matter how loudly the man protested. As a matter of fact, the guard said, Sam was spotted on the other side of town when the cart was supposedly set aflame. So it couldn't have been him. Of course, it probably didn't hurt that it had been one of the guards that had given me the accelerant I used to start the fire. They didn't like assholes either. Everything was good. Sure, I had dreams of something bigger. I'd lie in my bed at night, listening to the slow, deep breaths of sleep my parents took in their bed across the room. I'd stare out my window, and if I'd crick my head just right, I'd be able to see stars above the stone buildings across the way. And didn't I wish upon them? Of course I did. That's how these stories go. I wish for many things, like children do. I wish for money. I wish for the biggest turkey leg. I wish for a bow and arrow. I wish for my parents to be happy, always. I wish to find that one person who would understand me forever. I wish to become something great. I wished to become someone special. I wish that people would remember my name because I would be good and kind. I wish for Derek Mikan to kiss my face off. That one was when I was 9 years old and was absolutely positive he was the love of my life. He did kiss me 2 weeks later, but then he also kissed Jessica, David, Megan, Rhonda, and Robert. Derek turned out to be a bit of a whore. At no point did I wish to be magic. Sure, I had gypsy blood in me. Sure, I had northern blood in me. But fuck all if I knew anything about magic. So imagine my surprise when I was running from a group of older kids after having recovered a bag of cloth they'd stolen from Mrs. Kirkpatrick, a kindly old woman who lived next door and had even less than we did, when I turned down a blind alley that dead-ended into a brick wall and promptly whirled around and caused said group of teenage miscreants to turn to stone. Awkward. To say the least. Oh, crap, I said as I saw there was nowhere else to run. I was 11 years old, still scrawny as all fuck. I had great, big, expressive dark eyes that I'd inherited from my mother that I'd used to get myself out of more than a few situations. But I didn't think the bigger kids would appreciate my full-on patented, look how precious Sam is look. Adults were charmed by it. Girls swooned over it. Some boys did, too. stupid motherfucking teenagers who stole from old ladies weren't affected by it at all.
He's down here,
one of them shouted. I heard the beat of many feet pounding the ground behind me, and I thought to myself, well, I really wish this wasn't happening. So I turned around, ready to accept my fate. Most likely, either severe ass-kicking or murder. Either way, it would hurt like a bitch. As I turned, something flickered across my vision. A bright green something that reminded me of spring grass and trees swaying in a summer breeze. There was a sharp pull deep in my brain, and I took a stuttering step backward. And that's when the group of 11 teenage assholes turned to stone with a loud crack that shook the alley and caused pigeons to screech and take flight. I said, hey, like full-on stone. Their leader, a delightfully repugnant 15-year-old named Knox, stood in the front, his face frozen into an angry snarl, paused mid-step, left arm stretched out front, right arm swung back. I said, huh. Of course, people had heard the commotion and poured into the alley. I said quite loudly, I didn't do it. One of the castle guards that I knew quite well said,
of course you're here, Sam.
Followed by what sounded like a long, suffering sigh that dragged out for at least 30 seconds because he was a big, fat drama queen. I don't even know what happened.
Oh, you don't know what caused these dickholes to be turned to stone after they were chasing you.
Honest! And then I gave him the look how precious Sam is at 100% wattage, and he melted right in front of me.
That's not going to work this time,
he said. Well, almost melted. Shit, I muttered, dropping the look.
Pete, I swear, I don't even know what happened here. They stole stuff from Mrs. Kirkpatrick, and she's old, and it's not fair because she's so nice, and I just wanted to help her.
I sniffled as I tried to stop the tears from falling. I was very scared because I thought I was going to get arrested and thrown into the dungeon where I'd have to eat rats and poop in a bucket.
Oh, hell, Sam, don't cry.
When someone tells you not to cry, it's pretty much impossible not to cry. So I cried, and Pete wrapped an arm around me as we waited for my parents to get there. They looked scared as they came down the alley, but they hugged me close as I cried all over them, telling them I was sorry, and to please not let me poop in buckets because I somehow turned teenage dickbags to stone.
I'm not even going to pretend to know what you're talking about,
my dad said as he kissed my forehead because he was so awesome. I won't make you poop in a bucket, my mother said as she ran her fingers through my hair because she was so cool. That's when Morgan came. I didn't know who he was at first. Sure, I'd heard of him. He was the king's wizard, and he could do stuff like create fire tornadoes and make your face melt off. Rather, that's what the kids in the slums told each other because we were epic like that. I think it even started the rumor that he could make your nipples explode with a single thought. Judging by the looks of sheer horror on the others' faces, it was one of those things that sounded better in my head rather than out loud.
Most things often did.
So I didn't know who he was, not by looks alone. All I saw was a man with a black beard that came down to his chest and an epic pile of hair that stuck out all over the place. He was tall, almost as tall as my dad, but whip-thin, with long, elegant fingers that traced over the boys of stone in the alley. He was wearing a long black robe and pointy pink shoes that were just killer. I couldn't even begin to guess how old he was. Maybe 30? Or 300. When you're 11, anyone older is just old. When he spoke, his voice was light and melodious, almost like he was singing his words rather than speaking them. It was glorious.
This certainly is a surprise.
Is that? My mom whispered to my dad.
I think.
My dad breathed back. I like your shoes, I said. Because I did. They were pink and pointed, and I wanted a pair like that so bad. My mom and dad groaned. Morgan looked at me and cocked his head.
Thank you, little one. I made them out of the tears of a succubus, and a lightning-struck tree stump I found under the winter moon. I like your face.
I grinned. Thank you, big one. My parents made it when they got married. I was a honeymoon baby, whatever that means. My parents choked on either side of me. Morgan chuckled and said,
Very well put. Are these your parents?
Yes, I said proudly. This is my mother, Rosemary. You can call her Rose. And this is my dad, Josh.
Surname? Haversford, sir,
my father said. Morgan looked at my mother.
And you, dearie? Surely you haven't always been Rosemary Haversford?
My mother shook her head.
It was a name I adopted when I chose to leave the clan and marry my love. I was born Dika Shilaba.
Ah,
Morgan said.
I see. Your mamia was Vadoma, then.
My mother looked surprised.
Yes, my lord. You heard of her?
He gave a mysterious smile.
Perhaps.
And because the conversation was boring and I had questions, I said, So, anyway, how many tears did it take from the succubus to make the shoes? Like 6 or 50? How did you make the succubus cry? What's a succubus? When is the winter moon? Is that tomorrow? Can I make those shoes tomorrow? I do like the pink. I would look so awesome if I had those. Everyone would be like, Hey, Sam, where'd you get those shoes? And I'd be all like, Don't you wish you knew? My dad said,
Sam.
In a tone of voice that said I was in so much trouble when we got home. I glared at him and rolled my eyes. Morgan laughed, and my parents were shocked.
Feisty one, isn't he? My apologies, Lord Morgan.
My father said in a rush. Lord, I said loudly. You're a lord? He put a finger in Nox's stone mouth to touch his tongue.
I suppose I am.
I gaped at him. You're Morgan of Shadows?
So I've been told.
Oh, sweet mercy! I cried at him. Please don't make my nipples explode! His bushy eyebrows went almost up to his hairline.
I wish I could say I've never heard that one before. But strangely enough, that's likely the 6th time someone has said that to me in the last week.
Wow, I said excitedly. I started that rumor like 3 weeks ago, and you've heard it 6 times already? I am awesome. Sam? Both my parents said in that tone of voice that said I was in the most trouble I'd ever been in the history of my life.
My lord,
my father said,
please excuse my idiot child. He was dropped on his head repeatedly when he was a baby.
Hey! I growled at him. You said you only did that twice. What do you mean, repeatedly?
It would certainly explain a lot,
Morgan said.
Does he ever stop talking?
No, my mother said. Never. Hey! They all looked at me. I was suddenly nervous because I remembered that this was Morgan of Shadows, and while most of the stuff said about him was probably crap, there had to be truth in there somewhere, and I didn't want to be murdered by having my spleen removed with a magical knife or whatever he supposedly did to bad guys. I'm not a bad guy, I said to him, trying to reassure him, or me, or the both of us. Pete, my sweet guardian guard, said,
Well, not all the time.
I glared at him. He stuck his tongue out at me.
Did you do this?
Morgan asked.
Turn these boys to stone.
I wrung my hands together. I don't know. I don't even know how it happened. I was running from them and they chased me and then bam, they were all rock people.
Why were you running from them?
He asked. They stole Mrs. Kirkpatrick's bag of cloth, I said. She's old and doesn't have a lot, but she likes to make things like ugly mittens and pants for obese people, and it wasn't right. They shouldn't steal from nice old ladies who make big pants, so I went and took them back so people could eat all the food they want and still have clothes to wear. They all stared at me. Well, it's true,
and they chased me down this alley and were going to punch me in the throat, so I turned to take it like a man because that's what my dad taught me, that you should never run away from your problems if you don't have to, or don't want to, or if you're trapped by a dead end. My father looked down at me with such fierce pride on his face that my heart stuttered in my chest. Morgan frowned.
And then they just turned to stone.
I shrugged. Yes.
Okay then,
he said, clapping his hands in front of him just once.
Turn them back.
Excuse me? I might have squeaked.
Turn them back.
How? Morgan shrugged.
That's up to you to figure out.
I frowned at him. That's not helpful at all.
No, I suppose it isn't.
But he wouldn't say anything else. I looked up at my mom and dad. They both had narrowed eyes that told me in no uncertain terms that I better change the assholes back from stone or I was going to be grounded for at least the next month, if not longer. I grumbled at them, but pulled away to stand in front of Knox. By now, a large crowd had gathered at the mouth of the alleyway, which made things all that much worse because I could hear my name getting whispered over and over again. I was pretty sure I was going to make a fool of myself and be pooping in a bucket by sundown. Since I didn't know what I was doing at all, and figured I might as well try and fake it as much as possible, I raised my hands, palms out toward the stone teenagers, and shouted, Malakasham! Morgan said,
What?
Flora Borislam! Morgan said,
Flora Borislam?
It sounded like he was choking. Abra Wham! Morgan said,
What are you doing?
I squinted up at him. Saying magic words until magic happens?
Magic words?
Isn't that how magic happens? You say magic words and magic stuff happens. Like people turning to stone and exploding nipples.
I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be because of Flora Borislam.
He said dryly. I muttered. Like you know. Oh, but wait. He was the king's wizard. Okay, so you would know.
Flora Borislam,
he said again, rolling his eyes. Well, I'm all out of ideas. He looked incredulous.
That was your idea?
Yes. It might have gone better in my head.
I have a feeling that sums up your life perfectly.
Since I was too young to understand I was being insulted, I beamed and said, Thank you.
Colors, Sam. Do you remember seeing any colors?
I frowned. Colors? What do you mean? I didn't see any... I'd caught his attention.
Sam?
He said quietly. There was... Green? I said quietly. Like, this green that was out of the corner of my eye... It reminded me of trees and grass. He nodded, and something akin to wonderment flickered across his face.
Earth. Stone. Can you find it again?
I don't know how I found it in the first place.
But you know of it now,
he said.
Look for it.
And I did. For the longest time I did. I looked all over. Up and down and left and right, the sky, the ground, the buildings, my parents, Morgan, the crowd, the stone boys. I didn't see it anywhere. And just as I was about to tell Morgan so, something danced just out of the corner of my eye, and it was green. It was so green. And I thought, hello, hello there. Morgan took in a sharp breath.
You found it. I can feel it. It's so expansive. How have you never...
He shook his head.
Can you grab it?
And I could. I did. I would learn later that I didn't find it right away because I was looking too hard for it. But the moment I stopped pushing, it started pulling. I touched the green, and it was warm and kind, and I said, yes. Yes. And I pushed. Hard. The alley shook again, and people gasped and shouted as they took steps back. There was another crack, and the group of stone boys turned back into flesh and blood and bone. Knox, who'd been caught mid-yell, continued, gonna fucking kick your ass, Sam? Before he squeaked and came to a stop, seeing the alley had quite a few more people in it than he remembered. My dad growled,
if you touch my son, I'll cut off your arms and beat you with them.
Wow, I said in complete adoration. That was graphic and amazing. My mom said,
and I'll cut off your legs and shove them so far up your anus that you'll taste your feet at the back of your tongue.
Dudes, I whispered to everyone, that's my mom. Morgan said,
and I'll make your nipples explode.
I started that rumor, I told Knox. He didn't look very happy at that. As a matter of fact, he looked downright frightened. It was a good look on him, all blonde hair and bright eyes. If he wasn't such a dick, I'd have thought him handsome, but he was a dick. But he was still sort of handsome.
Please don't make my nipples explode,
Knox whimpered as his gang of jerks cried behind him.
Don't steal from old ladies who make ugly mittens and patents for obese people,
Morgan said.
And I might consider not exploding your nipples.
They agreed immediately and fled the alley in a cloud of teenage angst and hormones. You're so rad, I told Morgan. Honestly, almost up there with my mom and dad. Not the same level because no one ever will be, but dude, like, so close. He smiled at me.
Thank you, Sam. I'm glad you think so, because I have a feeling you and I are going to be spending quite a bit of time together for the foreseeable future.
You want to be my friend? Okay, that's cool with me. But you have to come over to my house at least 3 times a week. I took him by the hand and started pulling him out of the alley, reminding him that he still hadn't told me what a succubus was and that we'd really need to come up with code names for each other like Wolf Fighter and Star Explosion. He told me he already had his codename in Morgan of Shadows, and then he said that one day I'd have my own codename, and everyone would know it. I asked him how old he was. He said 247. I told him I knew he was so old. The next day, there was a package delivered from the castle. Pink, pointy shoes, and just my size. I wore them every day. I also wore the ugliest mittens that Mrs. Kirkpatrick had made specially for me for getting her cloth back. They were hideous, and I showed them to everyone. 3 days after the shoe delivery, we were moved into the castle, and I became the apprentice to the king's wizard. My mom worked in the king's garden and tended to as many flowers as her heart desired. My father was given a position in the forestry service, reporting directly to the king. When All Hallowed Day came the next winter, he was put in charge of the gift-giving, and every child in the slums was given a carven wooden toy. To say it caused an uproar is a bit of an understatement. A boy from the slums who would become the next king's wizard, a family plucked from obscurity and made the faces of the ideal dream. Some people were happy for us. Others resented us completely and fully. Still others were jealous of the position I was in, having trained years upon years to be considered in the position of Morgan's apprentice. But I was blissfully unaware of all the talk because I was too busy being kick-ass and learning magic. And it wasn't until I turned 13 that I realized I hadn't felt the need to wish upon the stars in a very long time.
Chapter 3. Face Full of Sass.
We strolled triumphantly back into the City of Locks, only a day after Lartin the Darkleaf met his gross end in a cave in the dark woods. Pete was on duty at the castle gates. He'd gotten older and fatter, there were lines around his eyes, and his hair was mostly gone, but he was still the best castle guard ever.
Oh, you are in so much trouble,
he said when we came into sight. Okay, maybe not the best ever, like eighth best. Hush, my good man,
I told him. I'm strolling in, triumphantly.
Yeah, you were supposed to be strolling in here 2 days ago.
Bah!
You gonna tell me what happened?
Not in the slightest.
Morgan is going to have your head.
Told you he was going to be pissed, Gary said, as he came to a stop in front of Pete. Pete pulled out some bits of apple that he always saved for Gary.
You're my favorite,
Gary told him. Sam got captured again. Pete smiled wildly. You fickle bitch, I said. Everyone's your favorite when they give you something. Can't hear you, Gary said through a mouthful of apple. Too busy eating deliciousness that was saved just for me.
I want apple,
Tiggy said. And so Pete pulled a Marcanian red out of his pack. It was the size of his hand, and I knew he'd brought it specifically for Tiggy. Tiggy grinned and took it from him.
I love you, tiny human,
Tiggy patted Pete's head, before biting the apple in half, core and all.
I saved Sam from capture.
I'm glad you are also easily swayed by fruit, I said with a glare. Your loyalties are shockingly disloyal.
Morgan wanted to see you as soon as you got back,
Pete said.
You know how much he hates waiting.
Scale of 1 to I'm fucked, I asked.
Pete said. Beyond fucked, maybe.
I groaned. Not my fault.
It never is, Pete assured me. Best get in and get it over with.
You'll protect me, won't you? I asked, giving him the big eyes.
Get in there,
he said with a grin.
I'll see you later for dinner at the castle. Supposed to be some big to-do tonight.
I hadn't heard anything about a feast before I'd left the week before. It was a good thing we'd gotten back when we did. If I'd missed the celebration, it would have reflected badly on Morgan. For what?
Pete shrugged. Promotions, I think, of the knights. Maybe a certain knight in particular.
And my mouth went dry, and I'm pretty sure I had half a boner.
Sweet molasses, I breathed.
Priorities, Gary reminded me before glancing back at Pete. Sam said he doesn't have time for a boyfriend, much less Knight Delicious Face.
Remind me why you call him that,
Pete asked. Pretty simple, Pete, I said. He's a knight, and his face is delicious.
And you've told him this?
I found the ground interesting to look at. Shut up, Pete. I don't care. Shut up. I don't even know you, so shut up. Shut up with your mouth.
Sam, a sad Sam,
Tiggy said succinctly.
Sam,
Pete said kindly,
maybe you should just take a chance, you know? What's the worst that could happen?
I laughed bitterly. The worst thing that could happen is that he would laugh in my face and then hit me with a shield and knock me to the ground and then step on my face as he walked by me. They all stared at me. What? You said the worst. He doesn't even know my name. Gary snorted. It came out blue and yellow this time. I'm pretty sure he does. You're next in line for King's Wizard. Everyone knows who you are. And then there's the fact that you both live in the same castle and see each other every day when we're here. And the fact that there's pining involved. That doesn't mean he knows me. He doesn't even say hi to me at all.
That's because you run far when he shows his face near your face,
Tiggy said. That is not even remotely true.
I hope not, Pete said. Because here he comes right now.
I'd run 20 feet before I realized he was lying. I turned and they were all laughing at me. You assholes, I said with a scowl. We need to go see Morgan. I want to get the yelling out of the way so I can sleep for hours and hours.
Think about it. Pete called after us. You're not getting any younger.
Fuck yourself, I called back sweetly. Yeah, Morgan was pissed. My arrival was announced as soon as I entered the gates of Castle Locks. I tried to get the announcer to shut his face, but he had already blown his horn and yelled out my name, so I instead focused on tamping down the urge to shove said horn down his throat.
It took Morgan less than 20 seconds to come storming into the lobby of the throne room. I was dutifully impressed, especially when he came in with long red robes flowing, looking all kinds of badass. I told him as much as I looked down at my road-weary clothes, trousers, and boots covered in dust. My jerkin was torn at the sleeves. I was not presenting very well. No wonder people were giving me weird looks.
2 days, Sam,
he said, voice flat. And I am aware of that, I said. And I have a perfectly good explanation.
Oh, really?
He said, cocking an eyebrow.
It wouldn't potentially have anything to do with the fact that there's a dead dark wizard in a cave in the dark woods.
I winced. I was kind of hoping news would not travel that fast, and I would have a chance to totally lie to you about not being captured. He looked unimpressed. He pulled it off very well. In his defense, Gary said, Lawton was a jerk who called me a horse and bound us up with vermilion root, so he totally deserved to be smashed to bits. Not helping, I muttered.
I smash him good, Tiggy said. He looked like squashed tomato.
He was monologuing, I said to Morgan. You know how I feel about villains monologuing. Seriously, just do what you're going to do and stop telling people about it. Morgan rubbed his head like he was getting a headache, which, to be fair, he often did around me. So I was completely unsure if he actually was getting a headache or if it was more of a, Sam, you suck kind of a thing.
My life,
he muttered.
This is my life. I chose this to be my life. My choice.
We all smiled at him, because he was so lucky and he totally knew it. He sighed.
Here's what we're going to do. You're going to hand over the wormwood, because I'm assuming you wouldn't show your face back here unless you got it. You're going to see your parents, and then you're going to bathe and sleep because you look like shit. You're going to wake up quiet and refreshed, and you will stay as such as we attend the feast tonight. You will stay in my sight at all times, and tomorrow I will kick your ass. And then we'll figure out what to do in case the Dark seek any kind of retribution for the fact that one of their own is dead. Do we have an understanding?
Mostly, I said. I'm not so sure about the ass-kicking part. He arched a dangerous eyebrow. Complete, I said. Complete understanding. I'm so understanding. I can't even get more understanding than I am right now.
Good.
He reached out and grabbed my neck, pulling our foreheads together. I felt our magic mingle, and I breathed a sigh of relief. It felt so good to be home.
I'm glad you're back,
he said quietly. He pulled away and turned to Gary to rub his right ear in the way that made his back leg shake and kick. Gary sighed happily, and Morgan asked Tiggy to come with him because he wanted to show him something in the lab. Tiggy took the wormwood from the pack on Gary and muttered quietly to Morgan as they disappeared through a stone archway that led toward the lower quarters of the castle where our laboratory was. Gary yawned, ears flicking back and forth. I'm going to go to bed. Tell your mom and dad I'll see them tonight. He pressed a snout to my cheek, and I protested the wet kiss, but only because that's what we did. It wasn't so much a secret that I secretly loved it. Later, I told him, and he went the opposite direction. I went through the throne room, where tables were being set up in preparation for that night's feast. Festive lanterns were being hung overhead, greens and yellows, blues and reds. People bustled back and forth. They called out to me in greeting, and I waved tiredly as I pushed through toward the gardens at the back of the castle. I knew my parents would have today off, and since it was not yet 11, they'd be out in the garden. Mom drinking her tea, and Dad stretching out in the sun. If anyone had earned it, it was them. So I was happy to see I wasn't too far off the mark when I went back out into the sunshine. Well, Mom wasn't drinking tea, and Dad wasn't relaxing in the grass. They were both sitting at an iron table, glaring at me. Damn it, I muttered. I fixed a big smile on my face and waved at them. Hi, guys. Fancy meeting you here. Mom was not amused. She stood up and stalked toward me. She at least had the decency to check me over first to make sure I wasn't injured, before she injured me by smacking me upside the head. To be fair, I told her, it wasn't my fault.
It never is,
she said, lips in a thin line, dark eyes flashing. I took more after her in looks with dark hair and eyes, but I was caught in between her and Dad in skin color. My mother was olive, and my father was snow, and I was somewhere in between, like I'd been in sunlight all my life. But I was tall like him, though I decidedly lacked the bulk he carried around, no matter how hard I tried to build it up. Gary said I was skinny and adorable. I told her, because I just remembered. I told him I was muscular and dangerous. She rolled her eyes as Dad came to stand beside her.
You are skinny,
she said in that melodious accent of hers, words falling out of her mouth like musical notes.
And you are adorable. But I would still like to wring your neck.
Aw, I said. I love you too.
Not funny.
Dad scowled.
We were worried.
You know I can handle myself, I said, trying to keep any and all hurt out of my voice. They were my parents. They were supposed to worry. I'm not a little boy anymore.
We know, Dad said, but that doesn't matter. We're going to worry no matter how old you are, especially when you get yourself captured. Again.
Gods, I marveled. How fast does news travel around here? This just happened.
And it dark? Mom asked. Seriously, Sam, when are you going to learn?
Hey, I learned. I learned so hard.
Gary and Tiggy all right?
Dad asked, because they were family as much as I was. I nodded, with all their pieces attached and everything.
You need a haircut,
Mom said, changing the subject and causing me emotional whiplash. But she was right. It was getting to that point where it was starting to curl over the tops of my ears, and I looked like I was 12 years old. I'll have it buzzed before I come back down, I assured them. Gotta look my best, you know. Speaking of, I need to go crash for a few hours because I'm pretty sure I look like death. They both got this gleam in their eyes at the same time, and I knew I was about to get a face full of sass.
Oh, that's right, Mom said with an evil smile. There's that thing tonight.
For the night,
Dad said.
For a specific night.
I am going to ask that the king grant me a secession from your parentage, I warned them both. He will say yes because he thinks I'm wicked awesome and I'm the future king's wizard. And then I will curse you both so hard you'll have extra fingers coming out of your faces.
Make sure you wear that red tunic tonight,
Mom said, ignoring me completely.
It brings out your eyes and skin so well. And those tailored black pants. Shine your boots.
And don't buzz your hair totally,
Dad said.
Leave some length. Makes you look more distinguished.
For the feast, I said, because I refused to believe my parents were attempting to pimp me out.
Yes.
Yes,
they both said.
For the feast.
For the feast.
Totally pimping. So many curses, I mumbled. I hugged them both and promised I'd see them later that night. I turned and headed back into the castle, wondering if I'd have enough time to grab something to eat, but deciding against it in favor of sleep. So there I was, looking like crap with what I'm sure were large bags under my eyes and dirt smearing my face, grumbling to myself about parents and Morgan and best friends who got snarky and murdered evil wizards to protect me, yawning so wide that my jaw cracked. Of course, since I was looking my absolute worst and talking to myself like a crazy person, I ran into the one person I didn't want to run into, ever. Well, that's a lie. I totally wanted to run into him while I looked absolutely amazing, and he'd say something like, "Hey, Sam, I have this extraordinary fascination with your equipment. Let's go somewhere, and I'll show you what it feels like to have your balls worshipped." But there was no sexy running into. There was a flail of limbs and a questionably manly squawk as my face collided with a chest undoubtedly built from pieces of my dreams, and a surprised grunt that fell from lips that angels themselves must have had a hand in creating. Knight Ryan Foxheart, soon to be Knight Commander Ryan Foxheart, the dreamiest dream to have ever been dreamed. The current holder of all my masturbatory fantasies. Oh, who's a bad knight? You're a bad knight. You've been so bad that I'm just going to joust with your butthole. He said in a surprised voice,
Sam?
So I said, meep. Because apparently Knight Delicious Face knew my name, and any and all command of the Varanian language was gone at such an impossible thought. It made me have feelings. Massive, throbbing feelings.
You okay?
He asked, sounding worried. And I thought that maybe if he had one flaw, it was that his voice wasn't as deep as what someone of his size and stature should have. But then I remembered that it was the most perfect voice I'd ever heard, and he was also so soft and quiet that it didn't matter to me in the slightest. And of course, that's when I realized my face was still pressed against his chest, because he was a single step above where I stood, and that he smelled amazing, like sweat and metal and horses and hay and grass and leaves and fires. And I really needed to stop doing that before we had an inappropriate situation on our hands. So, in a move graced with pitch-perfect dignity, I pulled back sharply, slipped on the stairs, and fell onto the stone ground, knocking my head a bit because my life couldn't get any more embarrassing.
Holy crap,
Ryan said from somewhere above me. I opened my eyes and things were slightly fuzzy around the edges. But then, my world was filled with the most beautiful green eyes to have ever greened. A lock of hair hung down on his forehead, and I knew I must have been rattled because I was giving very serious consideration to reaching up and brushing it away. I mastered control of my faculties just in time to stop my hand from moving, but that desperate action left all my brain function on my arm and away from my mouth, which is the only explanation for why I said in a breathy whisper,
"You are way too pretty to exist in this world with us mere mortals."
I somehow managed to stop myself from calling him Knight Delicious Face. It was close. And he smiled like I had amused him. There were full-on white teeth just inches from my face, and the corner of his eyes crinkled so endearingly that I wanted to wax poetically about his every feature so that he'd smile at me for the rest of our lives. Bards would be singing his praises for centuries by the time I was done with him.
"Think you hit your head,"
he said, and I felt his breath on my face. He must have had eggs and coffee for breakfast, and there's no reason why that smell should have been as hot as it was. I would never be able to have that combination again without going full mast. He had ruined breakfast for me, forever. And we just stared at each other, faces so close. I was a magical being, so I had no qualms admitting that the moment was magical. Which is why it ended less than 7 seconds later when another voice said,
"There you are. I've been looking all over for you. What the hell are you doing on the floor?"
I closed my eyes and reminded myself of my place. Because I had a place. And I most certainly wasn't near the level of the man behind Ryan. Prince Justin descended the stairs. Prince Justin, the king's only son. Prince Justin, the future king for whom I would serve as the king's wizard. Prince Justin, who looked like he was carved from marble by the loving hands of a true artist. All severe lines and planes and muscle and perfectly coiffed brown curls that fell ever so elegantly across his head as if they had nothing better to do than make sure Prince Justin looked better than anyone else. Prince Justin, Ryan Foxheart's boyfriend. Prince Justin, who abhorred me.
"Well, look who it is,"
Justin said, sounding like he just stepped in a pile of dog shit.
"Surprise, surprise. Another fine mess you've gotten yourself into, eh, Sam? The stories we hear about your negligence are just astounding."
I opened my eyes, and Ryan was still above me, but the smile was gone, replaced by a frown. I wanted to tell him to bring the eye crinkles back because they were so nice, but I somehow managed to keep that little tidbit to myself. Justin could have me executed. And if there was one thing I didn't want, it was to be executed. Leave him alone, Justin, Ryan said. It was my fault. I wasn't watching where I was going. And that was a big fat lie, which was awesome. Ryan pulled himself away, and I wanted to tell him to come back and make Justin leave. But then I thought of my head being chopped off, and so I let him go. I was surprised when he extended a hand down to me and watched me with an earnest expression. Fuck Justin. This is all I would ever get, so I was going to take it. I reached up and his fingers circled my wrist. His skin was so warm, his palms calloused and rough. His grip tightened on me and he pulled, the muscles in his forearm flexing in a way that was stupidly attractive. He pulled me up until I stood before him, and I didn't think I'd ever been this close to him before. I was terribly amused to see I was taller than him by an inch or two, and the fact that he had to look up at me to meet my eyes would no doubt play a further part in my you've-been-a-bad-night scenario as soon as I got to my bed. I am going to masturbate to you so hard later, I thought while looking at him. I blushed then because I realized that made me super creepy, and I didn't feel sorry about it at all. It was about that time that I realized at least a minute had passed and we were still standing very close to each other. He hadn't let go of my wrist, and I swear he was about to say something when Justin coughed sarcastically behind him. I pulled my arm back quickly and took 3 steps back, putting a respectable distance between us.
Are you quite finished, Sam? Justin asked. You look just awful. Maybe you should consider cleaning yourself up before you show your face again. I don't want people thinking my wizard is from the slums.
I ground my teeth together. I am from the slums. I avoided looking at Ryan. I didn't want to see the pity that was probably on his face. I wasn't ashamed of where I'd come from. In fact, I was proud of it. And no one, not even Justin, could make me feel like shit because of it. He arced an eyebrow. My lord, I added.
Well, I suppose as someone who was plucked from dirt and obscurity and essentially handed everything, you wouldn't understand the trials and tribulations of royalty.
Yes, my lord.
You horse's ass.
I think that's enough, Ryan said. I glanced quickly at him, and that angry frown had returned. Justin had come to stand right next to him. Their fingers were intertwined, and I was embarrassed. Ryan had probably had it with me taking time away from him and the prince, so I took another step backward. I didn't want to go to my room. I just wanted to go see Gary and bitch and moan and braid his mane and have him tell me that Justin was a giant cockfucker and I was so much prettier than him. Sorry, I muttered. And I turned to leave. Sam. I stopped and closed my eyes. I was tense as I took a deep breath because this was the second time he'd said my name, and it was just awesome. But it made walking away all that much harder, and I wished at that moment that I'd never heard of Ryan Foxheart. I plastered a fake smile on my face as I turned back around. Yes? He was watching me, so I lowered my eyes and stared at my feet.
Are you going to be there tonight? There's this thing at the feast.
And what the hell was that? I looked back up at him in surprise. He was staring resolutely at me. Justin was rolling his eyes and looked extraordinarily bored. Yes? I said.
Yes, I sort of have to be. Like, it's required because of the whole, you know, wizard thing.
Ryan coughed.
Oh, okay. Good. Because of the wizard thing, so.
Wow. Did I sound like an asshole? Not that I don't want to go, I said, hurriedly. I totally do want to go. For the feast and the other stuff.
With a promotion that you got? Oh, and good job, you.
I gave him 2 thumbs up, and I just cringed at how awkward I was.
As enlightening as all of this is,
Justin said,
Ryan and I have plans. This is a big day, after all. Not that you knew anything about it, seeing as how you